As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
.755 is real with David O'Brien and Erica Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome to 755 is Real, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic, and I'm with my co-host, Eric O'Flaherty. What's going on, Eric?
Not much. Tough one last night.
Tough one? Tough wake-up call? Tough flight?
Tough game.
Tough game.
You said Snit gave him the day off today, huh?
Snit gave him the day off today. I think it was a really wise move. Snit has a good feel for that, and they didn't do anything today. Told him to rest. I think both teams were tired. Neither team did a workout at all today. There was no media or anything at Truist Park. Everybody did whatever they did by Zoom. So
yeah, smart. Going West Coast and back in 3 days, 4 days is mess you up.
And I tell you what, man. I mean, the LCS, it's emotionally draining anyway.
Yeah.
The type of games these were, with so many pitching changes, and the crowds in both places have been loud and full, but Dodger Stadium was a damn cauldron, man. I mean, it was like you're in a nightclub for 4 hours, that whole game.
So it's exhausting watching them on the couch.
Yeah, every big moment is just, God, it feels like you've been through a battle when you leave there. It's just so sensory overload, dude, for 4 hours. It is sensory overload.
I mean,
it's exciting, but God, it's draining. I can't only imagine being a player out there in the middle of that.
Yep.
I don't think you're going to get much by taking a little live BP today in the 180th game of the season or whatever it is.
It's kind of like if you haven't found it by now, it's just you're not getting it.
I would imagine they probably had some live BP for Jorge Soler before we get to the series. That was the biggest thing, the best news for the Braves yesterday. The biggest development for the Braves is getting Jorge Soler back from the COVID list because – they really thought he might miss the whole series, even though he could get back in 10 days. There was a good chance he was going to miss the whole series. So he wasn't in the lineup yesterday because he hasn't worked out with the team at all. He wasn't permitted to. But you could look at him and tell he stayed in shape. I mean, he didn't gain a pound. But he came up and pinch hit and struck out. But I would think they'd probably try to get him ready today. But I would if they advance, I would anticipate seeing him back in the lineup in the leadoff spot. You know, because they're going to have DH in the American League City. So this is perfect timing for them to have him there now. So that you can have Jock and him and obviously Rosario and Duvall all in the lineup at the same time.
Yeah, it'll be good. You know, hopefully, I don't know. You never know how a guy's going to respond to time off like that. You wouldn't think it's a big deal, but, you know, not seeing live pitching for that many days or whoever he's hitting off. I'm guessing they said he was working out at the AAA site. So they might have had somebody to throw to him and get him some at-bats, but it's different in the game. But if you get him in, either give him a start or get him in and then start feeling good about him, I'm sure he's going to be fine.
Yeah. So that was the good news. They got that right before the game started. The bad news, and then there was even better news when Freddie Freeman hits his 2-run homer in the first inning. And Kelly is gone during the fifth at-bat. You know?
Yeah.
Joe Kelly gets the start. Freddie hits a two-run bomb off of him. They're up 2-0, and I'm going, they're going to cruise this thing. This thing's over. I really that was the first time in the series where I felt this thing's over. I mean, you know, that they were definitely going to win it. But, man, how things changed. You just didn't expect it to be against Max Fried. Anybody else? Maybe. But I did not expect it to be for Max Fried because he has been so the rock of this team's pitching staff since All-Star break, but especially since the 1st of August. He just hasn't had a bad start.
Especially in big games.
Right.
Every time they've needed him, he's been up to the task. So I don't think anybody saw that coming yesterday.
Yeah, you're right. Good point. It seemed like the bigger the stakes, the better he pitched. On that road trip, he was phenomenal against the Giants and the Padres. Then against the Phillies when they eliminated them. And then in the division series. I mean, he was lights out, exactly what they needed. But last night, he just kind of fell on his face, man. He wasn't in his spots. He usually doesn't make mistakes over the middle, and he was last night. A lot of them. He wasn't hitting corners at all.
Yeah. I saw some mechanical stuff with him, too. You know, I always look at a pitcher's – how soon a pitcher's head drops after they lift their leg.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's usually a key. You're breaking down your backside. And if you watched him – you know, he always has that little bit of a pause at the top. He lifts, he stays real calm, and he stays real tall, and then he fires downhill. And yesterday I was seeing it was like as soon as he lifted his leg, his head dropped. And, you know, you don't think that shit matters or it should be a big deal, but that costs you a little bit of extension, a little bit of leverage, you know, a little bit of timing. And all that stuff kind of just, it can add up quick in a hurry, and all of a sudden you're missing spots, and you don't have the same deception. You don't have the same life on the pitch. So when you miss middle, because if you watch his starts, you know, I think about this all the time. If you ever watch highlights of a start, they don't show all the pitches the guy got away with.
Right.
They show the punch outs.
Right.
Everybody talks about the punch outs. But when you're locked in as a major league pitcher, you're still making mistakes.
Yeah.
They're just getting fouled off.
Yeah.
And that was the difference yesterday was none of his mistakes got fouled off. Even when they mishit one, it was a bloop single because they were able to elevate it.
Yeah.
You know, that life on everything just wasn't as crisp yesterday. You know, I think that could have been a major factor, and you always got to wonder, you know, what teams are up to, you know, guys on second, picking up signs. Teams are really advanced at that now. And I think that's kind of the gray area that teams are getting into is I know a lot of teams film guys' sequences with runner on second, right? So they know what your go-to sequence might be. And me, I was so simple. It was like, let's go first sign after two or something like that. But the guys, the smarter starters, the guys that have to do it a lot, they'll have something real advanced. Like they'll do outs plus one. So if there's one out, it's second sign. If there's two outs, it's third. Or they'll do a first sign indicator where the first pitch, you know, if you put a slider down, it's third pitch. If you put a one down, it's the next sign. You know, so it could get real complicated. You can go as far as you want with it. But I know for a fact teams will tape that now and they'll analyze it. And they'll have that faster when you get a runner on second base. So they'll know what your go-to is. And I just have a hunch that the Dodgers are really good at that because there were some pitches hit in this series that didn't make sense.
Yeah, like the Luke Jackson home run that he gave up on the neck high fastball or clavicle high fastball.
Made no sense at all. Bellinger swung under a slider. Man. It was the right pitch. Assuming he doesn't know what's coming.
Right.
You know, I mean, he swung under a slider. Hitters never swing under Luke's slider.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so that tells you when a guy swings under a slider, that tells you he's either looking for it and over-anticipated the break because he knew it was coming.
Right.
Or two, he knew it was coming and tried to do the same thing and get under it and lift it. But if you watch Luke's swings, it's either a ground ball or a swing and a miss when he throws a good slider. He threw a good one. It was probably 1-0, I think, or 0-0, and Bellinger swung under it by 3 or 4 inches.
Yeah.
So now you're thinking, all right, you know, if you're reading that bat, you're thinking, all right, he's sitting slider.
Right.
Let's go heater.
Right.
They go heater next pitch, blows it by him. It was in the glove when he swung. Now you could give him credit and say, all right, he made the adjustment. This guy's a really smart hitter. But even if unless you're 100% convinced, fastball's coming, you're not going from swinging under a slider to hitting a fastball at your eyes out of the park to dead. There's no chance you swing under a slider and then get on top of 97 at your eyes.
Great point, man.
So for me, that was like, I'm not going to say they're cheating. You know, they could have done it the right way, but I felt like he knew it was coming.
And there was some talk about, you know, they're at Dodger Stadium and they've got any kind of technology they can have, whether legal or not, that they have it. But I'm not going to – I don't know for a fact if that's the case or not, but
it was suspicious.
Yeah. It'll be curious to see what happens these next two games at Truist Park. But I mean, even the outs against, against Max were loud outs early on. They were hitting balls to the track and caught against the wall. And you just don't see that usually with him. He usually pitches to a lot of soft contact, a lot of ground balls, and they were crushing balls against him. It just like,
and was everybody after him too.
Huh?
Everybody after him too.
Yeah. And he was,
they smoked balls all night.
And yeah, I guess every reliever that came in, and Max was, it wasn't like he was throwing 93 either. He was hitting, he was throwing velocity. He was hitting normal stuff. So he was just, I don't know. He said, you know, he's missing the corners, but, you know, what else is he going to say? He's not going to come out and say that, you know, it's like they knew what I was going to throw. So,
yeah. And you know, you don't ever want to accuse other teams.
Right.
That dude on the White Sox did it. And the Astros were, you know, you're kind of poking the bear.
Exactly. He might have just had an off night and missed location. I mean, it happens, but I agree with you. There were a lot of people. I mean, like Chris Taylor. Come on. That night he had, Jesus, man.
Three homers.
It was Babe Ruth last night. Yeah, and an RBI single. He had six RBIs. And then Pollock has two homers.
Two bombs.
Five homers from Chris Taylor and Pollock. 10 RBIs.
You know, that's the other thing, though, is you think if you're cheating, you'd shut it down once you got up like 7-8 runs. And they just kept torching balls. You know, they didn't hit that. If they would have done that off the A squad out of the pen,
yeah,
then it'd be even more suspicious. But they hit guys that haven't been getting as many reps. So,
well, they hit,
you know, maybe you give them a
right. Dylan Lee's in his first, the guy has pitched in two major league games.
I was laughing.
And Snit puts him in his first postseason game. And who's he facing?
Mookie Betts,
Trey Turner, Corey Seager, Will Smith were the first four guys he faced in that end. To his credit, the only guy that got a hit was Trey Turner. He got a single. He got Mookie on a routine fly. He struck out Corey Seager. And he got Will Smith to pop up. So that first inning was great. If he'd have got out of there right then, he's great. And then the next inning, he gets a pop up and a career highlight early for him. He strikes out Albert Pujols. So at this point, he's retired five of the six guys he's faced, including two strikeouts of Corey Seager and Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
So he gives up a homer and Chris Taylor and another single before getting out of the inning. But it's a pretty impressive appearance for the guy for his first time out.
I thought it almost might be good because when you get called up, it's so overwhelming to begin with.
Yeah.
That it's kind of like, I don't know if you could really up the ante anymore, you know, to try to control those.
Yeah.
So it might be better to jump into a playoff game right off the bat. Because you're already so intimidated and overwhelmed by the big leagues in the first place. You know, I don't know if he could tell too much of a difference, but he looked all right. I mean, it's just Dodgers are a tough team.
Two major league appearances at the end of the last weekend of the season. That was it.
Yeah.
So, and then, he had such high hopes for Chris Martin because he'd had a couple of appearances where he looked kind of like old Chris Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, last night he came in. He was the first guy in to replace Freed because Snit was not going with Matzik last night. He was going to rest him finally. He pitched in every game till last night, eight games.
That Luke was the one good thing about it.
Yeah. Luke had pitched 7-8. He was going to rest him. And I think he was going to rest Will Smith too. So the good thing is, you lost. You got blown out, but you got an off day today. Those guys are going to be fully rested and ready to go for both games this weekend.
Two days off.
Yeah. So. Chris Martin came in and first batter he faces is Chris Taylor and he just unloaded on an 0-2 sinker. He threw two perfect sinkers down and in that were pretty much unhittable. But then he either missed or I don't know where he was set up. I didn't go back and look. But somebody said he was set up out. Well, why would he do that? I don't know. I didn't see it. But the next sinker was up and away and he destroyed it.
Yeah. I hate that dude. I never feel good when Chris Taylor's in the box.
He's got some juice, doesn't he?
He just comes up with some big knocks.
So it was all Pollock and Taylor, two-man wrecking crew against them last night, 10 RBIs. The Braves get their doors blown off. But you know what? If someone had told you that they were going to have a 3-2 margin after five games and be coming home to Truist Park, you would have said, hell yeah, I'll take that.
Oh, before the series started?
Yeah, before the series. You would have absolutely been ecstatic over that. You're going to lead the Dodgers 3-2 when you come back to Truist Park for two games.
You got to win one at home.
You got to win one at home, and you got Charlie Morton waiting in game seven if you need him to start game seven.
Yep.
The best winner-take-all pitcher there has been in postseason history.
Yeah.
Has Ian Anderson been himself lately? No, he's been a little shaky in some starts. So, but I don't think he'll hesitate to bring in those guys. That was a great thing. Like we just said, yep. Those guys are rested. He won't hesitate to go with Minter for an inning or two if he needs him. Matzik for four outs if he needs him. You know, Luke comes in. I mean,
you could stretch them all and still feel good about having them tomorrow. You know, if you throw them game six,
right,
and they've pitched every game so far and they don't get that day off yesterday,
yeah,
and then you want to stretch them again, you know, I mean, every guy's going to take the ball, but how do you feel about how effective he's going to be if he goes two today,
yeah,
or tomorrow you wind up losing,
yeah,
and then the next day, you know, I mean, it's really good setting up the pen that if you are going to lose, they lost the way they lost,
right. Right. Just get, you know, you almost sacrifice that game once you got to 5-2, 6-2. But Snitzer wasn't going to use them, period. But, you know, they lose that game. Doesn't matter if they lost by a run or nine runs. And then you come back tomorrow with a fully rested pen. And, yeah, he's not going to save those guys for game seven. He's going to go all out tomorrow and try to win that thing and have Charlie ready to start game one in the World Series.
Yep.
So,
and if they all go long tomorrow, you know, that they could still come back and throw an inning the next day. You feel a lot better with a day off and the other day behind it.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
There were some great things for the Braves, even though they lost yesterday. There were a lot coming out of that three games in L.A. First of all, Freddie Freeman is back to being Freddie Freeman. Everybody that was worried about him, he had three hits in game four. He has a home run to start game five. Looks like himself. He had two opposite hits. I mean, he was – and then he just crushed that home run. So that was big. Obviously, Riley keeps doing his thing. You know what? You know who's not doing anything at the plate is Darno. He has just done nothing at the plate. And
I think he's hurt.
Yeah.
Did you see him grabbing his hand yesterday?
It seems like it. And they're running on him too. I mean, that's not on him, obviously. He's not getting much chance to throw either on most cases, but he hasn't done much. Duvall came alive and had some good games, so that's good. They got most of the guys going now in the lineup. And
Rosario's on fire.
Rosario's just ridiculous. I mean, Rosario's having one of those. You don't want to say it's a secondary or a bench player, Mark Lemke having a bit, because he's not that. He's a better player than that. But man, he's having just a star making turn. Everybody's all over writing stories about him now and everything. And you know, the funny thing is everybody, when they made those trades for four outfielders, he was the afterthought. Yeah. And people were like, why are they getting Rosario? They got these other three guys and Rosario's hurt.
Yeah.
And he spent 5 weeks on the DL, the Braves IL, with the oblique thing after coming from Cleveland already on the IL. But he's been tremendous. Tremendous. The game he hit for the cycle at in San Francisco was that game Freed pitch when they stopped the four-game skid. They haven't lost consecutive games since then. And they've been on a hell of a run since then. They've only lost like four games since then. They've won like 17. And he almost hit for the cycle again a couple of days ago. He had to settle for a second home run, a three-run homer in a ninth.
Hit it too far.
I mean, that game was ridiculous, man. Four hits, two homers, four ribbies. That was
It's a gene, man. It's a gene. Yeah, I swear it is. Because some guys just have it. We always used to know when we played on ESPN – you know, because the couple years I played with Escobar, we weren't really in it. But we knew when we played on ESPN, Esky was going to do something special that night. You know, that was like the brightest lights you're getting in the regular season. You'd play the Yankees or somebody on ESPN, and Escobar would make three web gems. You know, there's some guys that they get in the spotlight and they don't clam up. They want to do more and they feed off it. And it seems like Rosario's been doing that this whole series. He wants to be the guy.
And he wants to be up there with runners on base in crunch time too. I mean, he's a guy that really does want to shine, and he does not show any signs of feeling pressure whatsoever. But yeah, that game was game four. I mean, he goes home run on an 0-2 pit fastball in the first inning, just to lead off the second inning, not first inning, to lead off the second inning. That's what really started them on that, his home run. Duvall follows, first back-to-back home runs for the Braves in a long time in a postseason. Then he triples in the third inning on a 1-2 curveball. And these are both against Urias, who just did not have the. It's so funny. Dave Roberts has been pulling guys at the first sign of trouble, but he leaves Urias in for five innings, and he was hurting from the second inning.
He pitched two nights before that, or three nights before that.
Dave Roberts has made some decisions with pitching staffs. It's like, Jesus, man. Used nine pitchers in at one game. Guys coming out, guys getting one out.
I guess you never know what kind of pressure he's getting from up top.
Yeah, I don't know how many of these decisions.
You never know that relationship. Right. But, I mean, I've Urias coming in, you know, this is the thing nobody gives credit is a lot of people that just crunch the numbers don't understand how much different it is to throw in a game, the intensity you're throwing in a game. Like if you put a radar gun on a starter in their bullpen, they're probably throwing 84, 85. Maybe they only throw 30 pitches. You bring them out of the pen, they throw 15, 20 to warm up and 10 in the game. But those 10 they throw in the game, they're 95, 96, 97. You don't bounce back the same.
Right.
And I don't think that's been given enough credit, but I would have thought, you know, with Scherzer kind of saying my arm was dead.
When Urias
starts getting torched, you're kind of like, you might want to yank him. And it didn't get better.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they keep doing this more than ever now, going with starters in the bullpen. And it doesn't work usually, or it doesn't work the way as well as they had hoped.
It can, but I think you got to have young guys that one, don't know better, and you two, diminish, can bounce back.
And you diminish them as a starter, too, because then when they make their next start, like they Scherzer, suck. I've never heard Scherzer acknowledge something like that. My arm is dead. I shouldn't have it.
No.
But, yeah,
The tricky part about that, too, is Scherzer doesn't know his arm's dead till that first throw.
Yeah.
You know, you ask a guy how he feels.
Yeah.
Well, I feel great walking around. Then you go to throw the ball, and it's just like, it instead of making that hissing sound coming out of your hand, it just kind of poofs out.
Right.
And barely gets to the catcher. You know, you try to go find it, and it's just not there. So it's a lot of times you ask guys how they feel, and they go into those starts, and they're like, yeah, I feel good. I'll do it. And, you know, more often than not, guys are willing. But you make those first couple throws, or you start getting hot, and it's just not there. It's like, I got a dead arm, and I'm trying to go six. You know, it's a tough spot to put guys in.
And Max Scherzer is not going to say after an inning, I don't have it. He ain't doing that. He's going to keep trying to do it.
Yeah, well, he handed that ball over a lot easier, though.
Yeah.
In this start than he would in the past.
So, yeah, in that game, Rosario goes home run, triple third inning, single in the fifth inning on first pitch. Still Urias. So he had three of the eight hits against Urias. And then he wraps it up after he finally made it out in the seventh inning. He struck out in the perfect inning. But he comes back in the ninth and goes three-run jack, man, against Gonsolin.
Yeah.
I mean, so he's hitting pitchers, man. He's not hitting
Hammond Eggers. He's hitting everything, too. He's going opposite field, pulling balls. That's just when
– he's on everything. And he's hitting everything hard, too. He's hitting everything hard.
He's taking really tough pitches, fouling balls off. I mean, he's just locked and seeing a beach ball.
Some of these games, though, man, I'm just looking at him going, God, it was not that long ago when starters were still going seven, eight innings. The good starters were still looking to go seven, eight innings in every playoff game. And you're getting guys now just routinely going three, four. You know, pulls them out the first sign of trouble. I mean, I don't know what the answer is. Limit the number of pitchers on a playoff roster. I don't know, but somebody said it's efficient, but it's not necessarily enjoyable for the fan. That the bean counters or the analytics people say it's more efficient, these pitchers. But it's just not that much fun to watch, dude. As a fan, I'm sure it's not. Pitching change after pitching change.
I don't know. I mean, when I watch it, you had an elimination game yesterday. 200 $400 million payroll, whatever the Dodgers got, and you got a reliever starting an elimination game at home. Game five. It's not game six or seven, and you went 18 innings last night.
Yeah.
You could plan for this, and they're rolling Joe Kelly out there. And it's the same thing. Joe Kelly gets hurt.
Yeah. And he's done for this year, for the rest of the postseason. They had in that game, they had a bullpen game in game one. That's something else you would never have seen. Bullpen game in game one of the NLCS. The team with the largest payroll in the sport.
Never heard of that.
The largest payroll. This isn't the Tampa Bay Rays who routinely did that. This is a team that's built on their starting pitching. So they used in that game 9 pitchers, 8 relievers. Bueller went 3 2/3 innings. The next 8 guys go 1/3, 1/3, 2/3, 2/3, 1/3, 1 2/3. That was Evan Phillips. 1/3 and 1. Kenley Jansen, who was just filthy.
He was nasty. But still, you're talking about a 4-hour game, too. Uh-huh. They've been, I'll say it though, even though these games have been long, they've been
Great
pretty
games.
Pretty watchable because they're intense. But
yeah,
it's just not something, you know. I mean, it worked for the Rays, right? But it didn't work this year for the Rays. That lefty they brought in on short rest and had him start the game after coming out of the pen, or vice versa. I think they brought him in out of the pen after he had started a few days earlier. He gets torched and gives up 5 runs. You know, you're just not quite the same when your arm's dead and you're tired. And it's hard to foresee that if you haven't been through it.
So, I don't know. Like I said, the Braves would have been more than happy if you just said, well, okay, we're going to start at 3-2, have a 2-game series at Truist Park. You're up 3-2. He would have taken that. I was looking it up today, and because I was curious, because it felt like the home team has won almost all of these games, and sure enough, they have. 7 of the 9 games in this Braves postseason won by the home team. And they had great crowds in all 3 places, Milwaukee, Truist Park, and Dodger Stadium, which is the loudest place from the – Jesus, it's loud. The loudest undomed stadium in the world, man. Because in large part, they have what's the biggest too, 50,000, biggest in the National League. I think Chicago might be bigger, White Sox. But it holds 53,000 or whatever. They have, as we talked about, concert-level speakers that are unbelievable. And they've rented and they upgraded them since the days when you were there, when there was just like a stack of Marshall speakers.
Yeah, I looked that up.
Dude, it's like Lucasfilms must have come in there and put that sound in, because it is like sense around, louder than any other ballpark, but still crystal clear. And the bass feels like a nightclub in there. If you were an older person and you didn't like loud music or whatever, you couldn't go to a Dodger game.
No.
Because they are strictly trying to appeal to a younger audience, and it works because it feels like a damn club in there.
Well, and that gets people up too.
It does. People are jacked.
You know, we used to always joke, you know, with the biggest moment of the game, we'd be playing that Chattahoochee song. You know what I mean? Everybody's doing that shit.
Exactly. It's like
we were in San Francisco, we're in LA, and they're playing some kind of techno beat. People are drunk, losing their minds, and we're doing the Chattahoochee song. I'm like, man, we got to clean it up, Scott.
They're playing techno, but they're playing hardcore, great hip hop. I mean, they're playing DMX. They're playing Rough Riders. They're playing, playing some good stuff in the late innings. And it is loud, and the bass is going. Yeah. I mean, if you're on a roll, and you got 50,000 people singing along or just grooving, there's a great atmosphere.
It is.
Cap tip to the Braves for getting a win out of there, coming out of there with a win, because that place is hard to play in this atmosphere. It's a little different probably in June, you know, with 25,000-30,000 there maybe. But
I think that game 3, I think that's what hurt the Dodgers, that 2:00 start.
Yeah.
I think that was a mistake because they didn't call it, but that first game, if you looked at it, those stands weren't that packed.
I know.
2:00, it's hard to get there.
It takes so long to get in there, but by the middle innings, it was full. Yeah. I was shocked that it was for a 2:00 game, but you're right. At the start of the game, there were big swaths in the upper corners that were empty because people are still pouring in. People are still pouring in the fourth inning.
Yeah.
But, it's quite an atmosphere. I think the Braves are going to have a great atmosphere. They had great atmosphere so far in the playoff series, but it's just a little different, like you just said. You know,
it's different.
It's different, but it's loud, especially when they do the pitching changes with the chop and all that. But L.A., it's constant music, loud. Yep. From an hour before the game. They've got the whole thing down, and it's like, I think the Braves are looking to do it, and I know they're trying to appeal maybe to a different audience, but it's electric. I know the players love it.
Playoffs, look, if you're doing it for 81 home games a year, just blasting it full blast, you might have some people be like, I'm not trying to show up for that. But playoffs, you got to let it eat.
And they've already got the tickets, too. So playoffs, you're not trying to sell season tickets, you know? Let people have that. Yeah, rock it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to complain in a playoff game because the crowd's going to be loud, too. Like, if you're not ready for some volume, you know.
And I know some people are turned off by Dodger Stadium, you know, regular season and all that, and they probably have lost a certain audience. But they've more than made up for it with all the people that want to go because it's a place to be. It's so electric.
It's a party.
Yeah.
The only stadium I've ever heard louder than so when Uribe hit that home run off of Carpenter in 13, that's the loudest I'd ever heard a stadium except for a Seahawks playoff game. Because their stadium, they scream.
The way it's built.
Something about the acoustics. I mean, they designed it to be loud, but
it's really straight up on the sides and it keeps the sound in.
It all just pours
Arrowhead
down,
Stadium's like that, even though they built it 40 years ago. Arrowhead Stadium is really loud.
But, and those are more fans, too. You know, those are like 60,000, 70,000 people, you know, stadiums. But
yeah, like college stadiums, you know, with 100,000 people, they get loud as hell, but it's 100,000 people.
Yeah, double almost.
Right.
But and I think, you know, if the Braves had said, if the Braves have been offered, you sign right here and you come back and you get a win in LA and you come back, you're up 3-2 and you can just skip the trip.
Yeah.
They might have thought about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that was what we said, is they got to go there and they got to get at least one win.
Yeah. And they did. They did it. I tell you, one place they might be louder when they will find out if they get there is Houston in a playoff game when they let them keep the dome closed because they're keeping the roof closed now. That place I was there when they had the Killer Bees and when the Braves played them in the playoffs that year. And when that roof is closed, that place is, it's loud.
Was that when they went 15 and Burke hit a walk off?
Yeah. Yeah.
That had to be loud.
The one playoff game was 18.
18 innings. Joey Devine gave it up.
Joey Devine.
Right? Yep.
And your boy Farnsworth.
Yep.
Gave it up.
Love that guy. He scares the shit out of me.
Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show. Man, I understand completely, believe me, Braves consternation, the fans, because they've been through this. They've seen it in the NFL. They've seen it with college games blowing leads against Bama. They've seen it again and again. And they've seen the Braves.
3-1
when they
last
had
year.
The best team, or they thought they had the best team, not get all the way. Even if, you know, even in the years where they went to the playoffs every year,
lost to the Cardinals.
Well, they won one World Series, you know.
Yeah,
but this is a whole different era, and I know all they are looking back at is last year. But it's also a very different team than last year, and you got to keep that in mind. They're not going to an unproven commodity in these games 6 and 7. They're not just crossing their fingers and hoping that, you know, an Ian Anderson as a rookie can get through it. He's experienced now. And you got Charlie Morton, man.
Yeah. And these guys, and more of them have been to this series
in the lineup
before.
Right, in the lineup.
There's a difference going 5 games versus 7, focusing for 5 versus 7, understanding how you got to close it out. You know, just like when you see a reliever get promoted to closer and nobody wants to buy that ninth inning's different. You know, when you get to those next levels, you get to a 7-game series to go to the World Series and you're trying to close out the team that won it last year, you know, it's just a different level. But now they've been there. They've been through it. They've done it. And, you know, Ian's been there now. And all the position players have been there. And they got guys like Jocks that have been farther. So,
oh, my God, yeah. And we haven't even mentioned Jock Peterson, what he's done so far in the postseason and what he brings to the team as far as keeping them cool in these situations. I mean, in a clubhouse before Game 6, you don't think he'll be able to – if there's any kind of people that are nervous, I don't think there will be, but –
he'll know what to say.
What are you doing, man? We're going to win this thing. But I don't think that's a problem with this team anyway. I mean, you got your Freddie Freemans, your Rosarios, these guys don't feel that.
No.
Dansby's been through it all. Yep. Duvall's been through it, you know. I don't think that they're going to get all nervous and worry now that they're down to the last weekend at home and must win, basically. I just don't think that this is a team that's made up of guys like that. They've got guys that have been through playoffs. So many guys. Whereas last year, they had so few guys that have been deep into playoffs.
And that's why I haven't been here before helps. And, you know, like if Freddie was the type of guy that felt that pressure, he would not have gotten three knocks in game three after going 0 for 8 with seven punches. You know, that struggle and that experience could have ate him up. But what's he do? Goes to LA and rakes.
Yeah.
Puts it behind him. And I think that just as a whole, that's kind of the mindset of the team, and it kind of flows down from Freddie and a lot of the other veterans.
And pitching in the playoffs last year, deep into playoffs last year for Matzik and Luke Jackson, all these guys, Mentor got that start, went three great innings against the Dodgers in the LCS. All these guys have been through it. So, and then they just pitched in LA.
Most of them being ridden hard.
Most of them pitched twice in LA in that cauldron. So now they're going to be at home.
Yeah.
The fans are going to be cheering for them.
Yeah.
So I would be worried if it was reversed. If they were 3-2 and they were going to LA for 6-7, yes, I'd way be different. Worried. Be very way worried. Different.
Yeah.
Because the Braves now have lost. They broke that streak of 10 straight losses at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
But they still lost 11 of the last 12 there.
I mean, yeah.
But
that's what I'm saying. Take one out of, you know, go 1-2, flying across, go on the West Coast, adjusting. You know, the Dodgers, they got to adjust to the East Coast. But when you go West, you know, now your sleep schedule's messed up.
And would also be worried, if you'd have gone there and lost all three of those games and come back with the Dodgers up 3-2, also would like be that. Worried.
I'll take any situation. You can play any stadium you want anywhere in the world against any team. Being up 3-2
is
way better than being down a game and having to win two in a row against a team that's come this far.
And coming home, with a decided advantage at home. I know during the season, the Braves were actually a better road team. But a lot of that was opponents. They didn't get hot till August. Then you looked at the schedule, who they had at home. And Truist Park is not the same atmosphere during the regular season as it is in the postseason. I mean, it's like in the postseason with 40,000 in there every game.
Batteries packed.
The lights turned down and they're doing the chop with the flat. It's loud, man. It's a different atmosphere. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's weird too. You know, hearing the national media talk about the Braves, how they weren't. It's like this miracle story when they mention it, you know, how these guys get here. But, you know, for me, we watched all year long and we never thought they were out of it or not going to do something. We said all year long, like, this is a really damn good team. They're just not catching breaks. Things aren't going their way, this and that. And it's weird for me to see the narrative, you know, with that the Dodgers are just the better team and the Braves don't belong here. It's like, man, if you watched them all year, you knew they played like shit early, but they were way better than expected, and they just finally hit their stride late. It's a different team. Yeah,
and that's lazy, too, because what they do is they put 106 wins against 88 wins. Well, that's irrelevant when you look at what they've done since this team was put together.
Yeah, Alex
went out and got a whole different outfield, and look at their record since they did that. They had the third best record in the majors since the trade deadline behind the Giants and the Dodgers and not far behind it. And since that game I was talking about with the Giants out there, they had a better record than the Dodgers. Like the last 20-some games, they had a better, including postseason, better record than the Dodgers. So are you going to give me the overall season? Or are you going to give me what they are now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's lazy. I've seen a lot of laziness, you know, where I don't feel like people really researched and looked at the team and the changes they made.
You're going to look at Charlie Morton's 3-point whatever ERA? Or are you going to look at what Charlie Morton has done in the second half? Are you going to look at Max Fried's 3-something ERA? Or the fact that he had the best ERA in the majors after the All-Star break, 1.74. And that since August, the start of August, he was like 1.4-something. Last night was his first bad start. So
in a while.
Yeah, it's lazy. I mean, these are two evenly matched teams for all intents and purposes, especially with Muncy out. That changed everything for the Dodgers.
Turner's out too.
And without Kershaw. And now Turner's out. Kershaw. Joe Kelly's out. I mean, if this Dodgers team were to get past the Braves, I think they're going to get their asses kicked in the World Series now, where I would have picked them. Whoever won the NL, I would have picked to win a World Series 2 weeks ago. But now I think like the Astros would kick the Dodgers' ass now with all the injuries the Dodgers have had stacking up and how much they've ridden their pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love for the Astros to get knocked out. Braves Red Sox sounds good to me.
Oh, my God. The atmosphere would be –
it'd be awesome.
I want to cover my team playing – the team I cover playing a World Series in Fenway Park. Oof. Fenway Park atmosphere, man. And the connections between the Braves, you know, being from there – two-storied kind of franchises. And, Fenway Park, man. I want to cover a I covered a World Series there, the Red Sox, that Red Sox Rockies one, but that was over pretty quick. You remember that? When the Rockies were on that roll, but then they had 8 days off after clinching the NLCS.
It's got handed to them. Yeah.
They shot their wad. They were done by the time they got to the World Series, man. But, you know, I think it's probably going to be Astros. They're probably going to finish it off tonight. We'll see. I do still think the Braves are going to do it. I feel pretty good about the Braves' chances of doing it because of who they've got lined up. They're not going bullpen game in game six, you know.
God, I mean.
They got a rested pen. They got a fully rested pen now. I mean, it's probably better they did get that Snit wasn't tempted in a one-run game to bring in a couple of those guys last night. Matzik wasn't showing any signs of fatigue, but you had to wonder. It's got to hit him at some point. He pitched in 8 straight games, man.
Yeah.
High-stress innings, and not like getting one out either.
What a horse, though. I mean, he doesn't even show signs of slowing down.
Stud.
That feels so good for Snit just to have that button to push and know he's coming in. And, you know, if Matzik winds up having a rough one or giving up a run, he doesn't get torched. He walks a guy and gives up a bloop single, and then somebody comes in and cashes it in or something. But every time he's adding inning to himself, he could be bases loaded, no outs, I'm not yanking him. Because he just locks in and makes better and better pitches the more stress he gets put under.
Yeah. So you got Ian Anderson against Max Scherzer in Game 6 on Saturday night, and then if the Braves don't close it out, you'll have Charlie Morton against Walker Buehler, fully rested this time in Game 7. Both of them fully rested because the last time we saw Charlie, he wasn't fully rested either. So, or it wasn't in the LDS or the DS. He wasn't. So
even Charlie's start, man, was they were taking some suspicious pitches. You know, I know he had some walks, and that's like what I'm talking
walks.
About.
That was unheard of for him.
That's not normal. But that's what I was talking about. You know, it's like when you don't have your stuff or the other team has a tip on you. I thought they might have had a tip on them, the pitches they were taking.
Yeah.
I'm gonna stay away from saying any cheating's going on, but they might have had a tip. And the thing about having a tip, it isn't necessarily the hitting the balls, it's the pitches you can lay off and work yourself into counts. And he was throwing 3-2 breaking balls just below the zone, and they were taking it.
Yeah,
taking
if you can lay base. Off this, if you know his curveball's coming and you can lay off of it, because you ain't gonna
it's hard
hit
to
it.
Keep that thing in the zone. It's hard to throw that first strike, it moves so much.
They're not gonna hit it. Very rarely do they hit it.
No. Seager did, second hitter of the game, hit a high curveball out, which wasn't a good pitch, and he did it off of Ian too. So I'm not saying anything. But you just watch it, and there was some stuff where you're like, you know, maybe they had a tip on some guys or saw some things. And you know, good teams have a guy in the dugout, several guys in the dugout watching every little stupid thing you do. I remember Hayward had a tip on a guy that he raked and no one else could hit. He puffed his cheeks just a little bit on his changeup.
Really?
That was it. That was the whole difference, was his cheeks puffed up a little bit on his changeup. And the other hitters on our team couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Jay Hay could see it. He was like 14 for 20 against the guy with some homers. And everybody's like, oh, you know, he's just his kryptonite. It's like, no, Jay Hay knows what's coming.
Right.
You know, when he goes to his go-to pitch, he puffs his cheek a tiny little bit.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, you know, if Charlie had one little thing, you got so many guys studying you. You know, I mean, that's what makes
especially
it tough.
Especially if you're the Dodgers, you have unlimited resources.
Yeah.
Seager on that homer on 1-2 curveball that was up, middle and up.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was big, man. Starts that game off like that. Charlie settled down, though.
Yeah, he did. He battled.
He ends up going. It's like we talked about Charlie early in the year. He could give up 2 runs in the first inning and look like crap. And then he ends up going the same thing every time. 6 innings, gives up 2 or 3 runs and has another. Well, he went after that horrible first inning, 34 pitches in the first inning, 4 walks in the first inning.
Yeah.
And a guy ends up going five innings, 3 hits, 2 runs. The only thing that stood out on it was 6 walks. But otherwise, it was a pretty decent – it was a good playoff start.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I thought might have thrown him off was the atmosphere not being there, the 2 o'clock start. 2 o'clock's a weird time to start a game as a starter. You know, you used to either 1 on a weekend or 7 o'clock. And it was – you know, you're kind of getting amped up for a playoff start. You walk up there, it's 2 o'clock. Stadium's, you know, 3 quarters full. I thought that kind of affected both starters a little bit.
And they'd had, and he's probably still on 5 o'clock East Coast time. So you never play at that time. And they had their right, they had their walkthrough, you know, because they had to fly out there and all that. They had their walkthrough that night, the previous night.
Yeah.
So you have your, you know, if your voluntary workout that I don't even know what Charlie, I don't remember if Charlie was there. He probably was.
Probably just played a little catch.
Yeah. But so everything was kind of weird, that whole schedule, you know, that first day out there and all that after flying east to west. So that's the thing about these playoff games, man. You get the travel day, but when you're going east coast to west coast, it's so different than like the World
Series.
You're
beat up.
World
Series. You're beat up from the trip.
Huh?
Right? You're tired from the trip.
I'm wiped out. I'm a zombie. I mean, if
yeah.
You know, 4 hours in a plane after getting like 2 hours of sleep. But if they World Series, if the Braves make it, the good thing is they're either going to Boston or Houston, and either one of them is 2 to 2.5 hour flight.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar time zone. Houston's what, an hour?
Houston's an hour earlier. Behind. Yeah. Boston, same time zone. So that's a lot better. Yeah. Could be a little cold in Boston, but that's all right.
I saw Rosario say that the other day. They asked him what changed from Cleveland to Atlanta. He said the weather.
The weather.
You don't think about that, though, because those guys grow up, but it's 75 every day.
Puerto Rico.
They hate playing in the cold.
Yep. I've known some Latin players that did not want to go to teams, cold weather cities, and did not play well in cold weather games. And they said, Beltre. It's cold weather. I can't play. I can't hit.
Beltre before the games used to be all shiny. You know, just glistening, walking through the clubhouse. He walked through the clubhouse with his shirt off. He was so cold all the time. He would lather his entire body in baby oil. And so he could keep a sweat because it clogs your pores. Yeah. But I was just, I'd always look at him like, man, how are you? I would be so uncomfortable putting a uniform on over baby oil. But he went to Seattle and struggled for 4 years, got out of there, went and raked. Played another 8 after that.
Too bad he couldn't have been there when they had the Kingdom. All right, well, enjoy the games, people. It should be fun. Two big ones at Truist Park, and the Braves got a chance to. It feels so weird. I mean, we said all along this is a good team, and it could be a really good team. But they have a real good shot of going to the World Series. And not only that, but if they get there.
They can win it.
They can win it. Can you imagine? This team did not get over 500 till 110 games into the season, and they could win the World Series.
Isn't that how baseball works, though?
Of all the teams that you were going to think could bring this city its second title since 1995.
26 years.
This is not the one you would have pointed to and said that.
Nope.
After you lose Ronald Acuna, especially.
No, but watching them, though, it's believable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when they play well, when they get a good pitch game, they can absolutely beat anybody. So, and I always thought that the LCS was going to be the toughest competition. You know, whether it was the Giants or the Dodgers.
So, yeah. It'll feel good to put the Dodgers away and put that narrative to rest, too.
Yeah, that would be huge. Regardless of what happens in a World Series, they could put that to rest and move on from there. But that would be if they win this series, they will have won 5 out of 6 playoff series in 2 years after not winning one since 2001.
Yeah.
So they would put that to rest, too, that they can't win in a postseason, which they've already should have. But if they win this one, they can't, regardless of what happens in a World Series.
But if you watch the Dodgers, that's kind of the track they were on. You know, they built that really good squad. They went, got a little deeper, made it to the World Series, lost it. Keep going back, they win it. You know, this is the type of team, when you look around, they can keep doing it. But you never know when that window is going to close. So if you got a chance to get there, you want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not closing for the Braves, but you got a special, special group right now with chemistry that you might never have again. You just don't know. They got a great chemistry and they got momentum going. So, all right. Well, we'll talk to you guys probably next week, like Monday. We'll see if we're talking about a trip to the World Series.
Some good news.
Yeah. 755 is real. We're out. Thanks, everybody.